This is the Afternoon Magazine on AM 580 and online at will.illinois.edu. Good afternoon. I'm Celeste Quinn. Thanks for joining us today. Think about a time when you felt joy and connection. You were absolutely engaged, tuned in, alive, falling in love, seeing the birth of a child, realizing you've mastered a skill, discovering a remarkable work of art, having a wonderful conversation with an old friend. At the same time, I suspect all of us think or say from time to time, had I the presence of mind, I would have, you fill in the blank. In this portion of the program, we are going to talk about presence. Our guest is Patsy Roddenberg. She is the director of voice at the Guildhall School of Music and Drama. Until recently, she was head of voice at the Royal National Theatre. She has also served as voice coach at the Royal Shakespeare Company in London. She's also worked for penal reform in the United Kingdom, staging Shakespeare in maximum security prisons and working the criminally insane. She is the author of 5 books, most recently The Second Circle, How to Use Positive Energy for Success in Every Situation. Roddenberg says the second circle is about presence. Listeners, I invite your questions and comments for our guest, Patsy Roddenberg. You can join us with a telephone call. The number in the Urbana area is 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. We also have a toll-free number. That number is 800-222-9455. 800-222-WILL. The Second Circle is published by W.W. Norton. Patsy Roddenberg, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon.
Well, thank you, Celeste.
I'm a little nervous.
Why?
I'm talking to a voice coach.
Oh, goodness. I just think everyone's got a fantastic voice. You've got a very good voice.
Oh, well, thank you.
I think a lot of people don't believe they have a good voice, but we come into the world with amazing voices. It's just that we get them battered out of us, really.
Yeah. Why is it that we are uncomfortable so often hearing our own voice?
Well, I think we hear ourselves inside. Our ears are inside. So when we hear ourselves recorded, it sounds very, very different. And I suppose we become very self-conscious. But I think a lot of people have been told that their voices are bad. And they feel very nervous when they're speaking in public because of those things. But I think this can be worked on. I think we all can develop, actually go back to our natural voice as opposed to our habitual voice.
How did you find your calling in working with the voice?
A very good question. It's funny, isn't it? Because I think we often go into areas that terrify us. I couldn't speak as a child. I had huge problems. I was very shy and very inarticulate. So I was sent to a rather terrifying, we used to call them elocution teacher. She was an elocution teacher, and she despaired. I wasn't ever going to be any good. So as I worked on my voice, I decided that I was very drawn to acting, and I went to the Central School of Speech and Drama, and there I started to look at the thing that frightened me. I think often the vocation that we have in life is to release something that worries us. So I've studied voice, and I've worked on it. And while I was a student, I needed to make money, and I found myself able to go and work in prisons, Holloway Prison, Brixton Prison, top security prisons. I was teaching basic English. But I do remember having maybe an epiphany in the sense that I realized a lot of the people I was working with had actually lost their voices. And a lot of them, not all, but a lot, had started on the road going into prison because they couldn't communicate effectively. I mean, on a very simple level, if a policeman stops you and you can be present with them and talk, you have a chance. A lot of people just lash out and then get into more trouble.
Yeah. Yeah. That's so true. Now I would like you to talk with us about your love of Shakespeare and how you've put that together with the work, with the voice?
Well, I suppose if you work in theatre in Britain, you have to touch Shakespeare. But I discovered Shakespeare when I was very young, and I started to read him, and I thought he was... there are fantastic stories. But of course, as you begin to work on him, you realize that this amazing thing happens with great text. The sound equals the sense. Actually, if you speak Shakespeare out aloud with a lot of energy, you actually release the meaning. And then you go in deeper and realize that why Shakespeare is so great is because he's talking to us about our samenesses. He's a great believer in humanity.
Mm.
He asks us to be better than we want to be, particularly if we're privileged. He asks us to invest in unconditional love as opposed to conditional love. He asks us not to misuse our power. So at the center of these plays, the language is fantastic. He nails all the issues that we care about. And his final plays tell us very clearly that we have to forgive. Now, I enjoy spending my time with somebody working on those themes. And he does it. He then pinpoints exactly the concrete detail of our feelings. So if you do Shakespeare well, you don't feel so lonely. You think, my goodness, somebody else has been through this. I think that's why we do theatre. I think it's a healing force. It's an educational force, but it's also a healing force. We don't feel so abandoned. We begin to understand dilemmas. And in being present, Shakespeare writes about moments of survival. I always say Shakespeare is life with the boring bits cut out.
Oh.
And you can't survive unless you're present. You gave a fantastic introduction. Thank you for that, Celeste. And everything you said, I believe in. But I also believe that to be present is a way that we can survive. And until we're present, we can't survive. And I think a lot of the listeners know that. I mean, if you're being followed home at night by somebody with malice aforethought, you become alive. Your ears go up, so to speak.
Yeah.
And that is being present.
Yeah. I think so much of being present is about listening.
Absolutely. And if you don't listen to somebody, really, in the second circle, it's about a connection to somebody and allowing their connection to affect you. So it's a two-way street. It's give and take, as opposed to what I call first circle, which is when you are connected to yourself and you can see that in somebody's body. You know, they're depressed, they're thinking about themselves, their head is down, often their voices are mumbling. And when they listen to you, they think about how they feel about what you're saying rather than what you're saying to them. It's filtered through them. And the other side of the second circle is the third circle. And people in third circle, and by the way, we need all three circles. My passion at this moment of time is that we're losing the second circle. But in third circle, we spray our energy out in a very generalized way. Often the chest is lifted up. Our voices are a bit too loud. People invade our space. And those people often interrupt us. They don't listen. They know better. They're controlling us. But when we're with somebody, and actually it's all a child wants from us, really, is to be with us in second circle, listening to them, and of course us talking to them in second circle. But listening is crucial. And isn't it hard today to listen because we're in all this noise? I blame a lot on urbanization, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I say to people, you know, it's very hard to go anywhere without noise. So you're always fighting. You're always pushing. You're always rushing because of all this sound is coming at you. And I think it's a huge problem in connection and connecting to each other in a human way.
How do you deal with all the noise?
Well, I think you have to go and find silence every now and then. You've got to sit quietly, even if it's just turn the television off, just sit quietly. You've got to clean your ears out in a way. You have to go to the countryside. Of course, the countryside is quite noisy, but it's a different type of noise. But try to just sit, breathe, be still, and enjoy silence. I think a lot of people are very frightened of silence. I give exercises in the book about just to be with yourself and just listen to all the sounds around you and just see if you can peel them away and just begin to listen to yourself a bit.
Yeah. I stayed some years ago at an inn in the country, and it was very quiet there. And occasionally the inn hosted business conferences. And one of the people who was working at the inn told me that it was so quiet for one individual, he had to go out and sit in his car and turn the radio on because there was no television, there was no radio, there was nothing in the inn at all. You know, it was, you had a bed and a bath and a dining room.
I think that's so interesting. That's a wonderful story because in a way, the silence, you have to face yourself. You have to be present with yourself. And all that noise outside can distract us from ourselves. So we don't know ourselves. And again, that's part of the problem in life, isn't it? That it's very hard to know someone else until you make the journey with yourself. And again, I talk about that in the book quite a bit. I think it's very important for people to realize that there are practical things you can do to help yourself. Otherwise, it sounds too mystical.
Yeah, well,
it is in a way mystical, but at the same time, it's very pragmatic. You can release tensions that stop you breathing. You can get your breath going. You can still yourself. Most of the energy that distorts us lies in the shoulders, the upper chest, the spine. You know, if the spine gets depressed, it's quite possible that we get depressed. So by learning how to work on your body and your breath, everything begins and ends with the breath. Of course, it's the first thing we do, and it's the last. So until your breath is natural and regulated, life seems incredibly difficult. I always say to my dentist, she hasn't done it yet, but I always say to her, why don't you write breathe on the ceiling? Because actually, it would be much better as you fill somebody's tooth, that they're breathing. If we remember to breathe, it's the same with fear. I can't tell you the number of actors I've stood in the wings, putting them on stage, and they're terrified. And what I do is I release their shoulders. I get them standing without locking their knees so that they feel their body and feel the floor. I get them breathing low, and they calm down. And this is a really cheap trick, very quick trick people can try. If you put your hand against a wall and you gently push against the wall and make sure your shoulder isn't tight and you breathe, the breath goes down. You center the breath. And at that moment, you feel your power. Breath is power. Without breath, we can't do anything with power. So you take the breath in. And as you take the breath in, you calm down. And we all need to do that if we are in a very stressful life. And that's why a lot of people feel very released in the countryside, because suddenly the stress is gone and they can breathe again. The other really mad thing, my students think I'm absolutely off the wall when I say this, but I feel that when we pound hard, flat surfaces like sidewalks, we're not designed to walk like that. The tension builds up in our body. We're designed to walk on a bit of rock and then some grass, you know. So if you walk in the countryside on rough ground, you have this amazing experience after a while that your body realigns and you suddenly think, oh my goodness, I'm in my body. I'm actually connected. And this connection and engagement is partly what I teach, to be connected enough in yourself to reach out to the world and make connections outside yourself. Which is being present.
Yeah. I'm going to go for a walk in the park later today.
It's fantastic. Look at the trees, look at the birds, and you suddenly, it sort of comes back to you. By the way, I want to say to people that we're born present. It's not something that I've invented, of course. It's just that we're losing it a bit. And as we lose it, we get lonelier and lonelier. Do you know that rather sad picture you sometimes see in restaurants of a couple sitting together in first circle, not relating? It's so awful that you can be in a relationship and yet alone. And I feel that we have to reconnect. We need each other.
Mm.
Human beings need each other. And at some point, I know some people say to me, oh, I don't need anybody, you know. They're often those third circle people, you know, with their chests up and their, oh, I don't need anybody, you know. And that third circle energy is quite dangerous because it, on one level, can be effective. But at some point in life, we need connection. They did a wonderful study recently in England. I love these studies. You know, they spend thousands of pounds and they come up with this idea. And the idea that they came up with, old people are happier if they have a dog. Now, a dog is always present. What is gorgeous about a dog is that it's just present, and it needs you, and it loves you. And if something in your life is present with you, you have worth. Mm. And so many older people feel worthless.
Mm.
And of course they're not. They're terribly important. They have tremendous knowledge and wisdom, and we ignore them. But that's another issue.
Yeah. Well, with a dog, you get genuine engagement.
Absolutely.
24/7.
24/7. Unlike a cat is in second circle, but you can mix the circles. A cat is in second circle, but pretends that it's in first. So it sort of pretends that it's not really interested in you. But, of course, a predator is in second circle.
Hmm. Oh, a few moments ago, you said, we need all three circles.
Yes.
Why?
Well, I think we all need to just go into ourselves and reflect. I think a first circle, in a strange way, thinking of the past, we need sometimes to go back into ourselves. And sometimes we do need to defend ourselves in third circle. We need just to put a front on because the person we're with is not
trustworthy.
Yes, or we don't want that connection. You'll see, I remember when Judy Dench, I've worked with Judy for years, but she's one of the warmest, most connected people you could ever meet. And we talked about this, so I hope she doesn't mind me talking to you about it, but I suddenly noticed that when I was walking with her in the street, she had to protect herself. She had to put third circle energy to stop people invading her space. And we need these things. But I do feel that empathy, equality happens in second circle. We're present with each other in second circle. And I do feel that at this point of our history, in our society, we're losing it. And we're losing community because of it. And it can be regained.
Hmm. You tell a couple of stories early in the book that illustrate second circle moments. One is about your grandfather sharing a cigarette. The other is about a brief but deep conversation with a stranger on the beach. Would you share those two stories with us?
Well, my grandfather was a Coldstream guard. And I don't know how, but he managed to survive every battle of the First World War. And there's a story in the family that goes like this. He was at the Battle of the Somme. I think he was in Northumberland Fusiliers at that time. But he was in the Battle of the Somme, and he was out there, and there was a bomb crater. And he found himself in a bomb crater with a German soldier. And they both looked at each other. They obviously got eye contact. They absolutely got connection, and they saw each other's humanity, and simultaneously they decided not to kill each other. And so they had a sit down in the mud, and they shared a cigarette. And to me, that's that's why you put a hood on somebody that you're going to execute, because you don't want to see their eyes, because it's much harder to do it. The humanity of making contact. And I suppose he just thought, and the Germans just thought, this is silly, and just shared a cigarette. And of course, it was quite clear that if he had been, that had been found out, he would have been shot, because he had an opportunity to kill a German and he didn't. The other story was just the meeting. It's very interesting. When you first go to India, and I spend a lot of time teaching in India, in a strange way, the experience knocks the rubbish off you in a way. The pretense, you see such poverty. This was in the early 80s I first went. You know, I was teaching in a leper colony, and I looked at these little faces, well, children without faces, and it really was a very humbling experience, a very good experience. And I talk about India like it smashed a part of my heart open. It was like concrete had been smashed open, and I was, my compassion opened. But I just had this extraordinary meeting on a beach, and it was the only way it can be described. I walked on the beach with somebody. I didn't know their name, and it was the most powerful exchange of love I've ever had in my life.
Hmm.
Well, one of them.
Yeah. When was that, your first? When was your first trip to India?
81.
Hmm.
And it was, and I was probably foolish, but I'm glad I did this, and I continually do this when I go back to any place, Africa, wherever. I said, can I teach where they work? Because the initial thing was a tour all over India. They were going to bus people into me. And so I was taken to places. That I remember it was the British High Commissioner looked at me and he said, are you sure about that? And I thought, you know, oh, yes, I'm sure. So I said, okay. He said, fine, I'll bus you in. So I saw things that people don't see when they're tourists. I went right into the heart of people's worlds. And it was remarkable. And you have these amazing meetings. And I think partly I had that amazing meeting because I didn't have any cosmetic, I was going to say rubbish on me. I was just myself walking by the Indian Ocean. I was available. It's like the Ancient Mariner, isn't it? It is an Ancient Mariner, and he stopped with one in three. He suddenly sees somebody, and he stops that person in second circle. Great meetings, great connections. Isn't that interesting that you can have a meeting with somebody for a few minutes, and you know that person, and they know you better than most people in your life, even though you don't know their name? And that's, again, second circle. It's what I'm sure happened to, well, I know it happened to Romeo and Juliet. Up to that moment, Juliet was going to be a good little girl. She was going to marry Paris. She was going to behave. And suddenly, she is awakened. She is brought alive by meeting Romeo.
Hmm.
Across a crowded room.
There is a moment in a film that I recall now. And it takes place in India. Perhaps it was The Jewel in the Crown. But there's an older woman, and she's sitting in an outdoor setting near a fountain. And someone, a man, talks with her briefly, an Indian gentleman. And he says to her, after just exchanging a few sentences, he says, you're a very old soul.
Well, I think if you can bear the intimacy of second circle, it does reveal your wisdom, doesn't it?
Hmm.
And I suppose when we dare to live more in second circle, we actually see people and their pain. Maybe that's why we often withdraw. I know that if you're in grief and you manage to come out, often emotional trauma sends us back into first. Almost, maybe we have to go back there to, in a way, lick our wounds. But when you come out, you begin to notice other people. You suddenly notice other people's pain. And I think all those things are very important for us to work on. I think the world would be a bit better.
Is the idea of three circles of energy something that has long guided your work, or is this taking your work forward in a new direction?
Well, I started working on them about 30 years ago. I started because I have a stubborn streak. And when I started to teach young actors, I didn't like older teachers saying to me, that person hasn't got it. And I suppose they meant it in terms of charisma. But sometimes the person they had doomed or said, no way has that person got it, that person did have it in their class. So I started to work at what it actually is, how it manifests in the body, in the breath, in the voice, in the ability to listen. And that's when I realized that it is a form of presence. And then I started to just look at how energy moves through the body, the breath, the voice. You know, in first circle, it's falling back. In third circle, you know, bad Shakespeare is often done in third circle. You know, the actors just shout at each other, which it doesn't make any sense because it's not truthful. And the audience can't really, they can hear, but they don't listen. If you speak in second circle, the words have enormous impact. So I started to think about it and work on it about 30 years ago. And it started to occur to me that every great performance I've ever seen is remembered in second circle, because it's in second circle. You know, if you watch great athletes work, in fact, you can watch a footballer, if they fail to be in second circle, they drop the ball. Every success is done in second circle. So I started to take the work out of the theater. I've done a lot of work of reconciliation in war zones, particularly in Belfast. I did a lot of work in terms of bringing prostitutes back to being present. You know, a lot of prostitutes, of course, the only way they can survive doing their work is to absence themselves, so to bring it back. So I started to move it in all sorts of ways. And like anything in life, you never stop learning. And I wrote the book because people were telling me how useful it was, not only getting them back into second circle, but helping them stay in second when they're being bullied. I don't know in America, but in Britain we've had a big issue recently about bullying in the workplace. And I've worked with people who've been bullied, and they're generally in first circle. And the bully, often subliminally, is looking for a first circle person who looks like a victim to attack. So I started to notice that if I taught that victim to stay in second circle, the bully stopped attacking them, because actually they're not retreating. So the work is developing all the time, because I'm beginning to see all the applications. And because I've always loved working with anybody. Of course, the main body of my work has been in the theater, but I just actually believe in human beings. I think we're remarkable. And I think when we come into our presence, we can show our power and how special we are. Mm. And, you know, heartbreaking, when I was teaching in London schools, I was supply teaching, but just watching very open children, you know, going away for the holidays, and when they came back, I'd lost them somehow. They had disappeared. And so I believe in this work. I've been using it, and I've been developing it, and no doubt it will develop further, but I do think it's important. Mm. It's nothing I've discovered. There's a wonderful moment in life as a teacher, very humbling, when you realize you discover nothing. All I've done is codify and then worked on exercises to refocus people. So it's available for everybody.
This is the Afternoon Magazine. Our guest today, Patsy Roddenberg. She is the director of voice at the Guildhall School of Music and Drama. Until recently, she was head of voice at the Royal National Theatre. She's also served as voice coach at the Royal Shakespeare Company in London. Among the actors she's coached, Judi Dench, who she's mentioned, Helen Mirren, Hugh Jackman, and Ralph Fiennes. She's worked with business people and politicians. She's also worked for penal reform in the UK, staging Shakespeare in prisons and working with the criminally insane. She is the author now of 5 books, most recently the one we're talking about this afternoon, The Second Circle, How to Use Positive Energy for Success in Every Situation. And The Second Circle, it is about presence. Listeners, you can join us this afternoon with a question, with a comment. The phone numbers 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else, toll free 800-222-9455. 333-WILL, 800-222-WILL. Why don't you talk with us about some exercises that we can put to work for ourselves this afternoon or this evening when we get home and have some time to relax and reflect on the day, whether it's breathing or engaging, whether it's contemplating? What, give us some concrete ideas for finding our way into the second circle.
The first thing you have to check in on is the state of your body, not the cosmetic state, but just where you're holding tensions. Many people are sitting for many hours in front of a computer and they're slumping, their shoulders are being pulled in, the sternum, the upper chest is depressing. Now that is actually stopping your breath and closing down your ability to take full amounts of oxygen, which you could argue does stop you feeling and thinking. So the first thing to do is to stand up, stretch out, release your shoulders, move them around. Something's that simple. If you're feeling your chest is either depressed or lifted, just put your hand there and massage the upper chest. The spine is very important. Just move the spine around. Just get life back in the spine. When you're standing, so many people today, they lock their knees. Now, if you lock your knees, you stop the breath and you close your voice down. Just make sure that when you're standing, that you're slightly forward on the balls of your feet and release your knees. And immediately, you will feel a shift in your energy. Now, I like doing things the wrong way because it's a great way of learning. But if you now go back on your heels, you will feel the whole of your energy pull back. And your body gets a bit tight. So just check those areas. You might want to just massage the back of your neck and very gently just massage the jaw, which again gets very tight and stops you breathing. The most important thing that you can do when you breathe is to get the breath very deep into the body. Now here's a very simple exercise. If you stand in the way that I've just described and you just gently flop over to one side, so you're stretched over, and you gently, quietly breathe in a few times, you will feel your rib cage on that side stretch open. When you stand up, it feels a bit more open. You're getting more oxygen in. You're getting more space in your body. You're getting more power. Do it the other side. Flop over. And a couple of those, even a couple a day, will make you feel better. Now, if you want to do a really big breath exercise, if you hug yourself so that your arms up against your chest and you just flop over, keep your knees released so that you're flopped over with a hug, if you gently breathe in that position, you will feel your back open. And actually, as the back opens, you get full breath in. You've got to be a bit careful when you come up because you could be a bit dizzy, but just doing that will help. As you come up, I said it earlier, just push against the wall with your hand gently and breathe. And you will begin to feel muscles in the lower abdominal area engage. And if you play a sport, it's a fantastic thing just to throw a ball, because when you throw a ball, you breathe properly. If you breathe in and then you throw the ball, just doing a couple of those, even pretending to throw a ball, will get the breath going. And then you need to warm up your voice. The voice loves to be used. The more you use the voice, the better it is. So you just move your face around. I mean, these muscles, articulation muscles in the face, get very rusty very quickly. So you move the face around, and then you find a point. This is a very, it sounds a very odd exercise, but actually it will put you into second circle immediately. So your body's a bit freer, you're breathing a bit more. Find a point just above eye line. So there's an arc. And just come forward on the balls of your feet, and with an ooh, send the sound there. So it's just a light ooh, and you just send the sound out. And as you do that a few times, you feel your voice will come forward. If you then start trying to speak with that energy, your voice will be clearer. It will be reaching out of you. To speak in second circle, your words have to touch the person. We have all sorts of sayings in the language, you know, I was touched.
Mm.
So you start to use your voice, not pulling it back. You know, when people speak in first circle, all the words are pulled back, you know, so everything starts to swallow back. If you're speaking in third circle, you're too loud. In fact, you're pushing your voice. You know, I'm going to do it now. People who speak like that. And so you're actually bashing people with sound. It's very controlling, but it's not very conducive to good communication. You jolly well know, don't you, if you're having a discussion with somebody and they start pushing their voice, that is, they've gone into third circle, that they've stopped listening.
Yeah. Well,
so just to practice these things, read out aloud. Read out aloud. Practice reading in second circle with your child. You know, sit with a child, breathe to them, and speak to them, not at them. They respond then.
Yeah. There's a lot of third circle interviewers on TV and radio these days.
It's very controlling. It's very, it can manipulate. But we don't, I would suggest when you next hear one, you're not actually listening to the specifics. You're hearing a general quality. And there's a lot of people that do this with their voices, don't they? They push them down to make them more powerful. In fact, all you're doing is distorting the voice. And again, we're hearing the quality of sound, not the words. Good communication, you hear what somebody is saying. You said very rightly earlier, Celeste, that you have to be listening in second circle, but you also have to be speaking to somebody, not whacking them with a lot of sound.
Yeah. Why do you think we sometimes feel that need to whack, though? I mean, in it comes to mind, you know, for example, a journalist that I admire, a BBC journalist, is Owen Bennett Jones. He is a really tough interviewer, but the people he is interviewing, you know, they kind of need to be worked over a little bit. So what's the right balance there?
Well, in the big picture, I would suggest that if you talk to anybody, even if it's saying very hard things to somebody, it's more effective in second circle. I think it's not necessarily an easy option, but to absolutely speak to someone in second circle, you pin them, you nail them. I think we often go into third circle because we get so angry that we forget to breathe. And if we forget to breathe, we have to push the voice in order to get the power out. And that sounds harsh. Very interesting thing you're talking about in a way, because I wonder if he is in third circle. I mean, a lot of people under attack go into third circle because it's like a barrier. It's like a shield. You put everything up to stop being confronted in a way. But we can see it, whether we can analyze it, but when we see it, we don't believe it. We know that they're hiding in a way. In second circle, we can see they're open and connected. I think a lot of people push into third circle as well because they don't trust themselves. They don't trust what they're saying. I mean, I think that's heartbreaking in a way, and I come across a lot of people who do it, and they come over aggressive, and they'll say to me, I'm not aggressive, but they sound aggressive because they're overworking, they're over-trying. And in interviews, they fail interviews, they fail auditions because they seem to be pushy and aggressive, and all it is that they're not using their energy properly, they're not using their breath and their voice properly. And that is trapping them. That is absolutely... I had a woman come to me the other day in London, and she was a very bright woman, and she felt that nobody listened to her. And I said to her, do you know that actually when you speak, you sound very, very aggressive. And so people are just turning off, particularly men, rightly or wrongly, you know? And I just said, come on, let's get you breathing, let's get you in second circle. And she phoned the next day and she said, they're listening to me. You know, it's if you go around even in the next 24 hours and you listen to voices, the people you take notice of are the people who are speaking to you with a free voice, with eye contact.
Something else that you say in the book is to talk to people with a genuine interest.
Yes. I mean, as soon as you ask somebody about themselves within second circle, you can normally humanize them. I call it humanizing them. You know, you get those waiters that are just either in first circle with you or third. And actually, if you talk to them, you bring them in to your energy of second circle. You get better service if you're stopped by the police and you talk to the policeman. In second circle, you might still get a speeding ticket, but it doesn't go out of control because actually you're humanizing them. And they, I mean, most policemen speak in third circle, you know. You went through those lights a bit quickly, didn't you, madam? If you can bring them into second circle, they see you as a human being and you've got a charm. And I think there are professions that should be in second circle, but obviously it's very hard for them. I think doctors, if they're going to talk to us about bad things, they should do it in second circle with us. A priest should talk to us in second circle. I was very relieved, as my mother was dying, that a night nurse, there were three night nurses, one of them spoke to her in second circle. And I was so relieved that she had that.
Yeah.
That human contact. We know it when people shake our hands, don't we? We know, you know, that limp first circle handshake, and then there's that very hard, controlling third circle. But just connect with somebody. Just be with them. I think that's why the line in Shakespeare is resonates all over the planet. You know, to be or not to be. That is the question. I think that line resonates because somewhere in all of us, we have to question whether we want to be or not to be. Hamlet could have a few gin and tonics and stop being. I mean, if it's very hard to be present when you're drunk or drugged, which is why drunks are so boring. They're not with us at all. They've left us. So I think all these things we have to negotiate moment to moment throughout our lives, you know?
There, we'll leave it. We're out of time, and that's a wonderful point to end on. Thank you so much for talking with me this afternoon.
I've enjoyed it enormously. Thank you.
It's been a pleasure. Patsy Rodenberg has been my guest in this portion of the Afternoon Magazine. She is the author most recently of The Second Circle, How to Use Positive Energy for Success in Every Situation. The publisher is W.W. Norton.